Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Do you want to chant 25, 26, and 27 for now?
Samashti Risha Sarvesham.
Samashti Risha Sarvesham.
Swatmatadatmya Vedanat.
Swatmatadatmya Vedanat.
Tadabhavatatonyetu
Katyante vyashti samyaya Katyante vyashti samyaya
Tadbhogaya punarbhogya
Tadbhogaya punarbhogya Bhogayatana janmane
Panchi karoti bhagavan
Panchi karoti bhagavan
Pratyekam vyadadikam
Pratyekam vyadadikam
Dvividha vidhaya chaikaikam
Dvidhāvidhāya chaikaikam
Chaturdhā pratamam punaha
Chaturdhā pratamam punaha
Swasvetara dvitiya shaihi
Swasvetara dvitiyam shaihi
Yojanat pancha panchate
Yojanat pancha panchate
So, just a refresh. In the verse 24, it's introducing the Vyashti and Samashti, these two terms. And so it says, in 23, we're talking about defining the Sukshma Sharira, the 17 component parts of the subtle body. And then it says, Prajñaha, which is the Jiva in the Karana, with the Karana Sharira, Prajñaha, the Prajñaha who has that Abhimana, that identification. Right, the identification with that particular upadhi. So the prajñaha identified with because of the identification there with the sukshma sharira, gains the name of tajasa. Right, so because tajasa means it's self-effulgent, it's shining because of the sattva and not identified with any of the stula, there's no stula tamas. That causes the physical body and all of the inert things that require us to be aware of them. Whereas the tajasa is more self-evident because of the predominance of sattva in the Sukshma Sharira without the tamas, right? So tamas is set aside to go through this panchikarana to become the five physical elements. Otherwise, the tamas in the subtle form is just the space, air, fire, water, earth, tamas that makes up Hiranyagarbha and where all the jivas can fit in there in the subtle realm. So with that, he identifies that the prajna, the individual jiva with ajnanam because of the kata and the sharira, that identified with the subtle body is called taijasa. And then Hiranyagarbha, the Lord, Ishwara, attains the state of being Hiranyagarbha, which is the one who is identified with a total sukshma, subtle body, the total samashti. So this is what he's introducing here. So for prajna and Hiranyagarbha, we have these two terms. The vyashti, we could say the vyashti upahita chaitanya, consciousness, which is abiding in the limited form, the individual form, and the consciousness, which then is reflected in the total form. So samashti means total, the total aggregate of the creation. So Ishwara gains the status of Hiranyagarbha, which is the Satchitatma reflected in the entire subtle upadi. And so that's called samashtihi. Vyashtihi is prajna, or that the atma really, as prajna, identified with just in like a tree in the forest with one jiva, one object or one body mind sense organs complex within the whole. So these samashti vyashti terms are important. We're going to go through them a little bit more now. He does. Okay. So here in verse 25, you repeat after me. Samashtihi Ishaha Sarvesham Swatma Tadatmya Vedanat Ted Abhavat Tattaha Anye Tu Katyante Vyashti Sagnyaya. So the samashtihi ishaha is Ishwaraha. So Ishwaraha, if we say Ishwara or we say Hiranyagarbha, we're talking always the samashti upadi. Always Ishwara will be the one who's identified with the total, whether it's as Hiranyagarbha or as Virat. Another word for Virat, as we'll see, is Vaishvanara. So here he says, samashtihi ishaha. Okay? So why is Ishwara the one who is samashti, the total? So he says, sarvesham swatma tadatmya vedanat. Because for Ishwara, because of his vedana, vedana means knowing. We'll talk about that in a minute. Because of his knowledge of the tadatmya, of the swatma tadatmya, means his own self, swa-atma, the identity of his own self in reference for all of these beings, in everything. That tadatmya, swa-atma tadatmya, means tadatmya, means a total identification. So here the tadatmya is the swa-atma tadatmya. It's the total identification of himself in all beings. So you are me, you are me, you are me, that there's no distinction there. So because of that vedana, now remember, vedana in the Vedanta is not like an indirect knowledge. Vedana means just like if I have vedana, I have knowledge, you know, of everything that I'm seeing. All of this is known to me. That is vedana. It's not that I have the concept that, oh yes, as Ishwara, I'm the self in all beings. It's that is my actual recognition, my actual experience, that all of this is myself. So to understand vedana is as an aparoksha, as a direct, immediate knowledge, even a pratyaksha jnanam from the stand, I won't do that for Ishwara, but just as an example, if in your mind any any thought arises, any imagination arises, any emotion arises, you have a direct, immediate vedana of that. It's called, in this case, it's called pratyaksha. It's pratyaksha, which is not using the sense organs to perceive an object, but this is an example, but just to see the difference. When we have pratyaksha, it means sense perception, which gives a direct, immediate knowledge without anything interfering between you, the subject, and that, whatever the object is. So it's a direct, immediate. But here, Ishvara isn't using sense organs to experience himself as the creation. So that's what we call a type of pratyaksha is sakshibhasya. Sakshibhasya means whatever occurs in your mind, or for Ishvara, the entire sattva upadi is like an infinite vritti, we can say. It's just like, it isn't, but it's like that, an infinite vritti because of the pervasion of sattva. Sattva reflects consciousness. And so for Ishvara, my sense of me is with the whole. Whereas for me, if that sakshibhasya is there, whatever imagination I have, the whole is me. It's not an indirect knowledge. I experience the entire imagination as coming from me, you know, being sustained by me, resolving into me. And the knowledge that I have is that it's in this way, it's limited, but if I look at myself as the Ishvara, my little Ishvara, I'm the little Ishvara of my little imagination. But I'm the Ishvara of that imagination means whatever is going on in that imagination, whatever is known in that imagination, whatever is happening in that imagination, all of the characters in it, all of the birds, everything that's being experienced, the totality of that imagination is known to me. And it comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. It is maya, it is mitya. It has no being apart from me. That is my direct, immediate knowledge. So now think, when we say vedana, I'm just saying this, working with this so that vedana, sometimes when we use the word knowledge, it becomes some sort of an indirect, or I have a concept of that. When you have your imagination, you don't have a concept of it. That is your actual experience. That actual experience is the vedana. So now say with the whole infinite manifestation of the creation, if we say Ishvara from the Samashti, why does Ishvara get to be the Samashti? What makes him Samashti, the total? It is because he has a tadatmya, swa-atma tadatmya. He has a complete identification of his own being for all of the jivas. All of the jivas are all like cells in the body. They're all part of his total, of the total upadi. So they're all nothing but me. They all belong to my maya, right? They're integrated with my maya, and that's my direct, for Ishvara, that's my direct, immediate experience. And the manifestation of all knowledge, now to kind of think about that, if you have an imagination, of course, you could have many imaginations, and so for you, it's going to, any imagination will be limited knowledge. But now, instead of being limited knowledge, imagine that it is infinite, limitless knowledge. So the imagination comes into manifestation, and what is manifest is infinite, limitless knowledge. That's a rather complex, you know, manifestation, but nevertheless, it's a manifestation, and from the standpoint of Ishvara, it simply is, and is in a sense taken for granted, just like your imagination can be simple or complex, I suppose, but you don't think about it like that. It's simply your imagination. And so the creation is simply my creation. It is infinite, but what difference does that make? It is infinite, it is limitless, but the whole, you know, the whole of it is my body. The whole of it, first speaking for Ishvara, the whole of it here in terms of the subtle body, the whole of it is my mind, or the whole of it is known to me. So it's not about being big or small or being infinite or finite. It doesn't make any difference what size it is or how big it is. It's still all me and all is known. Every part of it is known to me. So that's Bhagavan. So Sameshtihi Ishaha. Why? Because of the Vedana, because of the knowing the knowing of himself as having that knowledge of identification of his own Atma, of his own self, with the Swa Atma Taratnya. So having that Vedana of his own, the identification of his own Atma, of his own self, with all beings, with the total. So that's why he, Ishwara, is called Samishti. Now for the Vyashti, he says, Tad abhava tataha anye, to, whereas anya, anye, for the others, plural, for those who are tataha anye, different from that, different from Ishwara in that way, because of the absence of that total tadatmya, that total identification with the self, with every, with the whole maya upadi. For the jiva, that tadatmya, that infinite tadatmya identification, isn't there, right? For the jiva, because of the absence of that tadatmya, there's no samishti, that samishti. There's only the vyashti, right? So he says, because of that, the jivas, anye, the anye is in the plural. So those who are other than that, other than Ishwara, the jivas, they go by the name, by the technical term, sagna. Sagna is a feminine noun, sagna. Sagna is a technical term. So sagnaya, by the technical term, by the sagna, vyashti. So vyashti is the tree in the forest, Sameshti is the total forest. Vyashti is the wave in the ocean. Sameshti is the total ocean that encompasses all waves. So if I have a tadatmya with the total ocean being myself and everything in it, I am Bhagavan, I am Ishwara. If I only have a tadatmya, a relationship of myself with the Vyashti, with the limited upadi, not with all upadis, then I'm jiva and I'm called Vyashti. So the jiva is always referred to as Vyashti, so Ishwara as Samishti. Okay? So you'll hear this term, Vyashti Upadi. The jiva has a Vyashti Upadi, a limited Upadi. It means a tree in the forest Upadi, wave in the ocean Upadi. Ishwara has a Samishti Upadi that is inclusive of everything that is. Okay? So with that verse, we've identified Ishwara as Samishti and jiva as Vyashti. Terms to know. So now, he says, next verse. Just to introduce this verse. We've gone through now, remember that in this little section, we're going into detail on how the Maya creation, you know, comes into manifestation. And how in coming into manifestation, everything that we experience on a subtle and physical level, all the differences and differentiations are accounted for. And so now we're at the point of going, now how do we get from the Sukshma Sharira, total, Vyashti and Samishti, Sukshma, subtle body, how do we get to the Stula Sharira, this physical Sharira? If you remember in Tattva Bodha, that's a Panchikaranam. So yeah, we have to now once again go through the Panchikaranam. Okay, so he introduces this Panchikarana now, becoming fivefold of all of the tamas aspect of all of the subtle elements, this process of becoming fivefold. Okay. We need the charts. You feel better when you get the charts. You can study it. Okay. So Tadbhogaya Punar Bhogya Bhogayatana Janmane Panchikaroti Bhagavan Pratyekam Viet Adikam. So here, in the second line, it has the word Bhagavan. Panchi Karoti Bhagawan. Bhagawan is Ishwara, does this with the elements, takes the tamas aspect and makes it fivefold. So here it just says Bhagavan does this panchikarana. He makes fivefold panchikaroti. Bhagavan is the nominative, as the subject. He makes fivefold, then what? Pratyekam. Each element. Pratyekam. Each one. Each one what? Viet adhikam. Each one beginning with space. So what, talking about the Mahabhutas, the five subtle elements, Bhagavan now, taking the tamas aspect of each element, puts it through this process called panchikarana, each element at a time, which I'll tell in the next verse. Why? Why does he do this? Why does he do this? Why does this take place? Tad bhogaya. For the bhoga, for the enjoyment of the jivas. Now, Ted refers back to the jivas. And this is interesting. For the enjoyment, the bhoga of all of the jivas, what does this bhoga actually mean? It does mean, if you look it up, it'll mean enjoyment or the experiences that come your way. So if we look at bhoga as enjoyment, it means the bhoga, the enjoyment of the fruits of all of your karma, right? So that's the kind of enjoyment. It's the enjoyment of the papak, of the punya karmas, and the enjoyment of the papa karmas. It means that experience of all of the results of your actions, all of the karmas, all of the karma phalas, you know, the results of your karma that really make up the whole prarabdha karma, and are producing for you in light of your karma positive and negative situations, the results of punya and papa. So for the sake of your enjoyment, then he says, just to give it more breadth, don't think it's just the, you know, having ice cream. So, Ted Bhogaya, so for the enjoyment of all of the jivas, then Punar, again to put it differently, Bhogya Bhogaya Tina Janmane. So here it says, for producing, these are two genitives. First, Ted Bhogaya is a dative compound. And then Janmane, also from Janman. Janmane is also dative. So here it means for producing, and again, for producing the bhogayatana. The bhogayatanas are the counter of experience for these enjoyments. Right? So we saw that in Tetrabodha, this physical body becomes a counter for the sukshma sharira to enter, and then through this physical body, all of these sensory perceptions and situations take place, and I'm able to experience them through the counter of this body, in this loka, in this bhuloka, in this stula, in the stula loka. So there's many which we'll see. So Ted Bhogaya, then for the enjoyment of the jivas, and he says, for the sake of producing the physical body and also the bhogyas that are to be enjoyed. So the bhogyas are those things that are to be experienced. So whether they be, let's see if he's talking about this here. Okay, he's going into this in the verse to come. So here all he says about the bhogya, like the things to be enjoyed, would be like anna, pan. Anna means food and drink, and any of the sense objects that are here to be experienced. Those are the things to be enjoyed. So in order for the enjoyment of the jivas, he has to create the bhoga yatana, the biphysical body, that the sukshma sharira has to indwell, so that it's capable of these enjoyments, and then the bhogya are the things that are enjoyed, the objects to be enjoyed. So for that sake, Bhagavan then does this panchikaroti, Bhagavan pratyekam viradikam. For that sake, he takes the tamas aspect of the five subtle elements and puts it through this process of panchikarana. So now instead of five subtle elements, we have five physical elements. And then these five physical elements also go through their own modifications to become this physical body, physical trees, physical space, air, fire, water, earth, and all of the elementals. In fact, when you're reading in the Upanishads, they'll say, how does this physical body come to be in this stula bhumi, the physical virat? How does that come to be? Well, it comes down from in the rain. Comes from the rain, comes up through the food, and then you're eating the food, becomes this physical, that food is modified into this physical body, annamaya kosha. Annamaya means it's made of food. This body is just made of food. You know. So Swamiji's talking about this. It's made of vegetables. Food is vegetables. Yeah. Not meat. The animal bodies are also made of food. And so in this commentary, he tells what kind of bhoga yatana is. The first one, this is interesting from an earlier conversation I had with somebody. The first one is that he lists is jarayuja. Jarayuja are snakes. So such as snakes, we could go on like, such as snakes, lizards, birds, ants, all of the different, you know, mammals, all of the different types of animals, all of the different types of humans, birds, fish, etc. All of these are bhogayatanas for transmigrating jivas. That's interesting to think also that every mosquito, you know, mosquitoes are in my life right now. I'm befriending them in the middle of the night. I don't mind. Anyway, so all of these mosquitoes, all of these living beings, whatever they are jivas who are incarnating to have the given sukha, the punya papa manifesting because of their prarabdha karma. So they're having all of these experiences, which their upadhi is perfect for. Right. So the upadhi that you have is going to be perfect for the karma palas that you need to enjoy in this particular life. So it's not as though, you know, sometimes if we think of the evolution, it's not that there's not evolution, but the jiva is not evolving. The jiva is continually maybe in evolving in the sense of becoming more dharmic. But the jiva upadhi is not evolving. It is taking on different upadhis in different eras of the creation, you know, and the upadhis that would be appropriate for that particular era. Like, for instance, dinosaurs, things that don't exist anymore. At one time they did exist, and at one time they were available. They were available forms for a jiva based upon your karmas to take. So now in this era where there are less and less forms to take, still the forms that we do take are existing here and now, and they are appropriate forms for us to exhaust our punya and papa in this loka. So he says, in order to create these bhoga yatanams, these different types of upadhis, of different types of bodies, as well as to create the physical space, air, fire, water, earth, in which all of these are existing, and to create the objects of enjoyment so that you can exhaust your karma, all of those require this panchikaranam. That's what it's for, so that the sukhma shriya can take, become embodied here, enjoy those experiences, and then leave them, get a fresh body. So that's the idea. So having brought in the word panchikarana, he now explains the panchikarana. So let's take a look at that. Buddha vidhaya cha eka ekam
chaturdha
pratamam punaha swa swa swa
swa swa
itara
itara
dvitiya
dvitiya
amshaihi
yojanat
pancha
te.
Okay. So here, he explains the Panchikarana. First, you have an interclinal past participle in ito. So, vidaya, dvida vidaya, having first made twofold. Having made what twofold? Dvida means twofold. Vidaya means kritwa. Having made twofold, what? Eka ekam, each one. Each one what? Each one of the subtle elements. The tamas aspect of the subtle elements. So having made each one of those twofold, chaturdha pratamam punaha. So take the tamas aspect, because previously it doesn't say that's here, it's in the commentary. It doesn't bring that in. But we've already done the sukshma and the raja, we've left out tamas. And so now what is left is the tamas. So the tamas aspect of the five subtle elements, take those, space, air, fire, water, earth, the tamas aspect, dividing first all of them in half, each one, space in half, air in half, fire in half, etc. So each one is divided in half. So it says, so having divided in half each one, then chaturdha pratamam punaha, then take the first half. That's the first thing you do. Take the first half and make that chaturdha, fourfold. So the first, you first divide them. You first divide them in half, and then take the first half. Doesn't it could be the bottom half or the top half? Take the first half. It's like taking one of the halves, right? And make it fourfold. Fourfold of what? Of one fourfold means. So here you've got half a space, and now space has become four little spaces. Half space, 50% space, and then an eighth, four eighths, right? Which would be dividing the half space into quarters. Everybody see that? So you've got four on the bottom. And so now, for each of these five elements, you've done that. You've divided it, first divided it in half, and then quarter, the first half. Then, swa, swa, itra, butiyam, shaihi. And then, by a part, which would be an eighth of each of the second half, so you'd say amshai dvitiya amshaihi swa swa itara. Each one of those eighths would be united. Each one of those would be united with the other half, which is the eighth. So the first half that's divided into the four, each one of those would be given to or united with the four elements remaining. So if you've got, this is why it's nice to have a drawing. So just imagine the five, split them all in half, and then each one of these has four, five times four, 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 four. The four air, fire, water, each one of air, fire, water, and earth, one eighth, which would be one fourth of the bottom half, would go over to space. And so true for all of the other elements. Those four eighths are going to split out for each one of the other elements. And so that each element has half of itself, like half space, and an eighth of all of the other four. So we've been through this. You have to kind of visualize it. But what you should end up with is why do you have space, air, fire, water, earth, which has gone through this Panchikarana? How do you know it's space, air, fire, water, earth? Well, because it's 50% that. But what causes it to be have gone through Panchikaranam or to become part of the stula sharira, sameshvi and vyashvi, right, is that it also contains an eighth of every other one of the elements. So that's what we call the process of Panchikaranam becoming fivefold. And that is what we call upadana karanam, the material cause of this physical world, right? From the standpoint of Maya. So it says, doing that, from uniting each one of these eights with the other four, it says, then what? Pancha pancha te. They each become pancha pancha, fivefold. Fivefold, 50%, plus 50% of itself, plus an eighth of all of the others. So this is the process. Once this process has taken place, this process of manifestation of the Maya is complete, because there is no other level, right, other than this, the karana sharira, the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, and this stula sharira, this physical body. And physical body, whether the vyashti physical body or the samishti physical body, it's all stula sharira. So now, there's one more. I'm making too good of time on this. Okay, good. Everybody feel clear on this? Kind of? Yeah. If you've come late, then we spend a lot of time on it in the Tetrabodha. So you might want to listen to that. And I see a little bit of blank faces here and there. So.
I need the chart.
Yeah.
Do you want to make a chart, Derek?
Yeah. It's too much writing. We have a chart.
You can just print that out.
We'll print it out. Memorizing or not memorizing this, if you're a teacher, you kind of have to know this, because in most Prakarana Granthas, in these explanatory texts, it comes. You have to know what they're talking about. And then you have to write it all and remember the whole thing, until it becomes second nature. Because, I mentioned this yesterday, but just to kind of talk a little bit more about it, why, it's kind of like an ancient paradigm, A paradigm means a model. That fits the universe or fits a situation in a particular way that is useful. So it gives an explanation. So say if we want an explanation of how the creation came into being, and you're just looking at it from a scientific perspective, you probably want to start understanding the Big Bang theory, and theories that we have in science about how this creation came to be. But we're talking then, this particular paradigm or model, explanatory model, is telling us how this physical universe came to be. It is not talking about at all, really, a subtle body is certainly not talked about. The reincarnation is not talked about. Ishvara is not talked about. Hiranyagarbha is not at all talked about. The creation itself, being cyclical and coming into manifestation and going out, that's not included in the paradigm. The actual oneness in terms of a part to the whole between the individual and the vyashti and the samishti, that's not really talked about. That, why are you a conscious being in this creation? How is that? Where does the consciousness come from? That's not talked about either. That is not saying anything good or bad about that particular model. That explanatory model of the Big Bang theory is circumscribed to handle and to understand something that is going on in the creation. So the birth of the creation, that's what it's for. But our model, our paradigm, this explanatory model, has a bigger job in a sense. So it's not that the model is scientific. It's not meant to be scientific, or mathematical or anything. Though we do have mathematics, dividing into four. But that's not its purpose. It's not its purpose. Its purpose is to have like a picture, an explanatory model, which includes every aspect of your experience. And the aspects of your experience, have to do not only with conscious being, but then it has to do with the mind and your sense organs and your physical body and the prana, the vital force, all of the activities of your body. Where does that all come from? What happens when the body dies? All of these type of things. What happens to me when the body dies? They have to account for the sukshma sharira. And then what is the relationship between the subtle body and the physical body? What is the relationship between the sukshma sharira and the atma, the self, consciousness? Because I'm a conscious being, how do I get to be a conscious being? If I'm just material, that means consciousness must just be a product of the brain. Because yeah, where does it come from? It's got to come out of this physical world somehow, unless I'm accounting for a subtle world, in a sense. These are just words, but this model, if you think about it, what is it trying to help you recognize? That's the main thing. It's trying to help you recognize, to distinguish yourself, the Atma, from the Jiva Upadi, the Vyashti Upadi, and the Sameshti Upadi, the limited conditioning adjunct. Your body, mind, sense organs needs to be differentiated from yourself. The Sameshti Upadi, Ishwara, the total, needs to be differentiated from the self, right? Because otherwise, the viveka, the discrimination between the self and you, doesn't have its counterpart to have that viveka be between the self that is you and the rest of the creation. Right? It also has to show what is the relationship of you as a jiva on a subtle level and a physical level with Ishwara. Or what is even Ishwara? What is Ishwara? You know? So that's why as you go through putting this descriptive model, I would call it, you know, a descriptive explanatory model, which contains all of your experience. Everything that is Maya, which includes your body, mind, sense organs, and Ishwara, the whole Maya, Upadi, Sameshti, and Vyashti. And it also accounts for your consciousness as the Adhishtana, as the reality, the very being which this whole Maya depends upon. That's all included in this model. And so it is an exercise in viveka, right? And it's also an exercise that helps you to recognize that this body, mind, sense organs is not in any way separate from the total, from the Sameshti, from Ishwara. It's not in any way separate. It's kind of sometimes for understanding this using different drishtantas, different illustrations for this. You think you use the body. It's often used as a drishtanta for what? For the relationship between the part to the whole, between the jiva and Ishwara. I am to Ishwara like a cell is to my body. Right? The cell in my body is totally belongs to the body and is totally governed by the karmas, by the dharma, by the structure, the order of the body. It can't hop out of that, right? The cells in the body are totally contained by what we call the dharma, but in here using dharma, the order, kind of the infinite order which pervades your body. It organizes the whole body, is the structure in which every part of the body lives and operates, and every part of the body has its purpose. It has its purpose. It's there for a reason. It has its place, you know. And so we can talk about like all of the cells in the body, and you can also talk about, it's nice using the body in reference to a cell in the body, the limitedness of our knowledge in reference to the vastness of the body from the standpoint of a cell in your little toe. Just imagine a little cell. We can even go smaller. What about the mitochondria? You know, the different parts within the cell, you know? Even for those little things to even understand their whole world, cell world, is a big deal. But then this little cell, how can it even know the toe? You know? How can it have any concept of what the body looks like? So that's what we have here. It's the infinitesimal nature of these upadis, you know, which are part and parcel of an infinite manifestation that we call Ishwara. But now it doesn't really seem like that to us. We seem really big. I mean, we're big here. We're so much bigger than a cell, you know. But then when we look up at the stars, you know, and recognize every star as a sun, we recognize kind of the vastness of this. But then the vastness of this has to be also understood differently. So I'm just going to talk about this because it's really kind of neat. You don't think of yourself as big. You just think of yourself, means your body. You don't think, oh, I'm really big. You might think I'm really fat or, you know, really tall or something like that. But you're not really big in reference to the self. The cell might think you are infinite in size. There is no possibility of knowing what this body looks like, or even we call body, but we have no idea what that body means. So when we talk about Ishwara Zupadi, also we're in that condition. We talk about Ishwara Zupadi, but what is it like? Like I imagine it as like an infinite mandala in a way, just total order and music and beauty, just a manifestation of infinite beauty. Infinite is the problem. And so you have a limited model, so to speak, to appreciate Ishwara. So from my perspective, Ishwara is huge, infinite. From the cell's perspective, this body is huge, infinite. You know. So what do you think Ishwara's perspective is? From Ishwara's perspective, is Ishwara huge and infinite? From his perspective, I would say no. He just is. Just is. It doesn't make it, it's not about size. It's about this is my upadhi. And from the little cell of the mitochondria, you know, there's no way to understand that. You can only kind of appreciate it. But to be really take in that vast infinity is not possible. That's why we say, so say now you have self-knowledge, you little tiny thing, you. We have self-knowledge, right? What does that self-knowledge mean? Self-knowledge means there's two terms we have, sarvajñaha and sarvavit. You have to go to the Mundaka Upanishad for this. Sarvajñaha and sarvavit. From my standpoint as a jnani, I have sarvajñaha, but not sarvavit. Sarvajñaha means that I know the truth of everything in terms of I know myself, which is not big or small. Right? It's not about size. The self has no size because non-dual, not an object of space. So my self-knowledge is complete. It's not partial. It is exactly the same as Ishwara's self-knowledge because the self has no time or space or size, and so the self that I am is completely, wholly the self that Ishwara is. It's not that Ishwara is a big self. I have a little self. The self of any upadhi, whether it be a lizard or a mosquito or a monkey, you know, or a human, or a devata, or any of the gods, the self experience, the me experience, is exactly the same. There's nothing, they're not possible to have a partial experience. Right? But the upadhis are different, right? And so the upadhis, depending on their mix of sattva, rajas, tamas, so to speak, their upadhis and the mind at different times, when we say the mind is too rajasic at that time, it just means that it's too active. Your sattva mind is being influenced by rajas. We'll see that as we get to the 15th chapter of the Gita, 16th, a few years from now. Not a little before that. So... when I have sarvajñatvam, it means that this I have vedana. The vedana, that word that we just used, vedana. I have direct, immediate appreciation of my own being as the self of all beings. There is no difference, and I know myself. Aparoksha, jnanam, directly, immediately, I know myself. Yeah. But I don't have sarvavit. Sarvavit means I don't have particular knowledge of this infinite creation. So like say, as the Ishwara of my imagination, I have not only sarvajñatvam, I know it's maya, I know it's mithya, I know myself, I know the relationship of myself to that mithya manifestation. That's all very clear. But I also know everything that's in it. I know all of the particulars, you know, all of the jivas, you know, all of the five elements, all of the everything that's in it, all of the particularities that are there. That's sattva-vit. Sattva-vit-tvam is just the general appreciation. Satyam nitya, the nature of myself, the nature of maya itself. That's there. That's both there for both Ishvara and the jiva. And it's there. It's the same. If you understand maya, it doesn't matter if it's a little piece of maya or an infinite piece of maya. It makes no difference at all. If you understand space, air, fire, water, earth, it doesn't make any difference at all if it's only the space that you're experiencing, the limited space. You can do what's called an infinite extension and see those five elements as existing in a subtle level and in a total level throughout the whole creation. So these things are the same, but all of the different nama-rupas that are there, or what is going on in all of the different lokas, the higher lokas and the lower lokas, you know, and all of the jivas, they're all traveling, you know, infinite number of jivas going here and there and landing here and there, and, you know, and all of the karmas that are involved. We don't have that sort of a bit, but we can appreciate it, you know, in broad strokes. And so when we do something like this Vedanta paradigm, Upanishadic paradigm, it is showing us the creation in broad strokes, how the creation comes into manifestation. In the broad strokes, putting emphasis on the things you need to know, that you need to understand in reference to your relationship with Ishvara, the Jiva Upadi, the Jiva Upadi's relationship with the Samishti Upadi, with the Ishvara, that you need to understand that. You know? You need to understand your relationship as the self to the Ishvara Upadi and the Jiva Upadi. You know? And then included in the Upanishads also is you need to understand Dharma and Adharma. You need to understand transmigration. And how does Dharma, Adharma, Punya, and Papa play into that? So you have a broad, basic understanding of the rules of Dharma. The whole first portion of the Vedas is an understanding of the rules of Dharma. Why? Because every one of us wants to be happy. And without an understanding of Dharma and Punya and Papa, and the nature and the relationship of Dharma to Antakara Nishuddhi, to that purity of mind, you know, then you're just groping around blindly in the universe without an understanding of the basic rules for relative sukha, relative shanti. You know? And relative shanti, so if we go a little further, it's the relative shanti because of crores and crores of Dharma, lifetimes of Dharma, you get a depth, more depth of shanti, which allows you to become a mumukshu. Because unless your mind can pull in from the sensory gratification, you're just running around in the world trying to fill up. And as we'll see in what's coming here, what a miserable pursuit that is. They'll be using the example of it's as though, imagine some little kitas are worms. All these little worms in the ocean or in the rivers being caught by these whirlpools. And they're just tossed from one whirlpool to the other, you know, trying to get out, but they can't. They're just spinning around. There's no shanti for them at all until after they've accrued enough punya over lifetimes, some good Samaritan. Good Samaritan means a good person, helpful person, comes and sees the plight and goes in. You can think of all the times you've saved a little animal. You're a good Samaritan. So you go and you pull the little kita, this little worm, out of the whirlpool, and take it so gently and put it on the shore. This isn't the verse. This is where we're going. Put it on the shore, in the shade under a beautiful tree. Rest it there. Save it from this samsara. Vartana means the whirlpool, that we go from whirlpool to whirlpool to whirlpool to whirlpool, spinning around, you know, and we just can't get out. There's no end to it, because there's no no place where the whirlpool stops. You know, you can have sukha dukkha, but you have sukha badukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. I love the sukha. I don't love the dukkha. How can I have sukha without dukkha? Bhagavan, please save me. I realize that I can't have the sukha without dukkha. All of these are, anyway, all of that's coming. So I'm just giving you a little pep talk on this paradigm, because I don't want you to get overwhelmed by it or underwhelmed by it. It's something to be contemplated on and understood, because it's, you know, in India we have what's called upasanas. And like, say, for instance, in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the first part, Chandogya has a lot too, but in the Brihadaranyaka, there are beautiful upasanas which are visualizations of Ishvara. They're all spelled out, like when you see Ishvara, the eyes of Ishvara as the sun and the moon, that type of thing. The mind eye is the sun is the eye, the mind is the moon, the rain is the waist, you know, the earth is the feet. All of these are beautiful, you know. They're upasanas. Some of the upasanas are very intricate, not that easy. You know, you have to learn the upasana, you have to practice it. They have many parts. And then when you get into something like Tibetan Buddhism, the upasanas are extraordinarily complex. You have to spend time to learn them. And then you hold that upasana in your mind, because it has, there's something there for you to get, for you to recognize. And it's also good for what we call ikagrata. I mean, single-pointedness of mind, because you hold it in your mind, which is a feat to do. To hold an upasana or to hold any kind of visualization in your mind requires some samadhanam. Samadhanam means that strength of being able to do that. So here, in a way, even though this is a teaching paradigm, explanatory model that is useful for us, it can also be viewed as an upasana, you know, taking that whole creation step by step by step and watching the whole thing unfold and all of the jivas come into being as part of Ishvara. Mm-hmm. And you end up with a total vision, which an upasana means like a vision, right? Which is a vision of Ishvara with all of the jivas and all of that. You know? And then you're holding that and you understand it. And also you recognize when you're holding that as an upasana, like your imagination comes from you and is sustained by you and resolves back into you, you also recognize as you're holding that upasana that it's that upasana comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. So you recognize that you yourself are the adhishtana of the whole thing. So even though this has a lot of parts to it and is tedious in a way, there's something very, very beautiful about it. You know, so as we get more familiar with it, we can practice it as an upasana. You know, just because it's a model that holds all of them, all of the moving parts that we need to differentiate ourselves from, and in that differentiation, those things that we've differentiated from my being, then belongs to Ishvara. It's not outside of Ishvara. It belongs to the Samashti Upadhi. Right? So it is part of Ishvara. When you recognize that everything, your prarabdha karma, the way you look, the appearance that you have, the life that you're living from moment to moment, is part of Ishvara's story. It's not your story. You are part of Ishvara's story. You know, what is my story? Yeah, it's your story, but you are Ishvara. Your body, mind, sense organs, and the prarabdha karma is Ishvara. So how can you say it's not my story? Well, because you've just had that viveka and you've handed everything that can be objectified over to Ishvara as part of the creation. And so therefore it belongs to Ishvara just like the cell belongs to the body. So then how does that change your attitude in terms of your life and what you're doing here? You know, I would say it simplifies everything. Incredibly simplifies everything that's exactly what the Shastra talks about in terms of this Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, this Karma Yoga Buddhi. where everything is just a worship of Bhagavan. I have my place here. This body, mind, sense organs is here. As that's why I was in the meditation with this Ishta Devata. If you get rid of all of the Ajnanam and the Jiva Srishti and all these raga dveshas, these likes and dislikes, and I need this and I need that, you just wipe all of that out. Just be this Upadhi, you know, where that is an expression of Ishvara, minus the Ajnanam, then you are an Ishta Devata to yourself. This form itself is like an Ishta Devata. If you have an Ishta Devata, like Saraswati, or for the Saraswati, or Jnaneshwari, or Dakshinamurti, or Ganesha, or Shiva, or Rama, you can have whatever your Ishta Devata is. It can be a Western Ishta Devata also, it doesn't matter. You know, that Ishta Devata, if you really think about them, they are an embodiment of Ishvara without all of the Ajnana. You know, and so what would that be like for you? You know, it makes this, you're this body, mind, sense organs is an expression of Ishvara, and you have certain duties. That's why you're here. That's why everything in the creation is here. It's here right now, right here, because it's like a cog in the wheel. It is playing a part. You have a role, right? Whatever it is, every moment you have a role. There's something meant for you to do, and it's very obvious because it's here to be done. But what if that's how you relate to the world? This is what's here. This is my role. This is what's here for me to do. It's very, very simple. And the reason that your life can become that simple is because you're not searching anymore for Ananda. Now, it doesn't matter. I can do this or I can do that. It's not going to increase my Ananda, nor is it going to decrease my Ananda. And so my mind enjoys Shanti, and so therefore it has Ananda. Even from an Ananda Vritti, it's got, you know, it's got Vritti Ananda. Why? Because it has a Shanti Vritti. We were running around like crazy people, you know, trying to get this object over here that I want, that if I have it'll make me happy, and it kind of works. Because you get it, and for the moment you get a Shanti Vritti, because for the moment you're free of desire. So running around, let me have this, let me have that, let me not have this one. No. Okay. And then you get these Shantavrittis. Boom. Little bursts of Ananda, little felatia, just little sense of Ananda. You know? But for Jnani, you have a Shantavritti because the raga dvesha is all, what do you call it, like a non-binding desire. It doesn't matter because the Ananda isn't really there. The Ananda is a projection of ignorance. The whole creation enjoys the Satchit Ananda, Atma. Not just one thing in it. The whole thing equally is, you know, the graham cracker. You know the graham cracker story? It's all, everything is only the graham cracker. It doesn't matter the nama-rupa of the graham cracker. You know, that enlightened little boy. It doesn't matter. So that's our situation. And so the more we kind of understand our place in the scheme of things and see the whole scheme of things having for its adhishtana, the ananda that we're seeking, then enjoying myself, I can be an Ishta Devata here. I'm just a manifestation of Ishvara. I do what is there to be done. Not for Ananda. I already have Ananda. You know, but that attitude gives me the Shanti, which means I have Vritti Ananda too. Vritti Ananda means the Ananda that you enjoy in your mind depends on a Shanti Vritti. What do you need to do in this world to have a Shanti Vritti? You know? You need to give to others, you need to love others, you have to have ahimsa, you have to give up your raga dveshas as though they're true or real. You know? You just follow Dharma and be with yourself. So simple. It's not simple without knowledge. Without knowledge, it's all a mess. Very tough.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnamadah Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
Oh, let's get in the pile here.